Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
World-renowned double bassist and three-time Grammy Award winner Edgar Meyer has won remarkable acclaim both for the music he has written and for a variety of recordings and live performances with everyone from the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center to James Taylor, the Chieftains, and Yo-Yo Ma. He has released a new album of his own works and, through the magic of multi-track recording, performs on a variety of instruments himself. We had the opportunity of speaking with him about this newest recording and about the way he creates the music for this particular kind of performance. I got your new album. I know you cool. from a lot of other albums, the Appalachian Journey. We say Appalachian here. That's a long
Where are
one.
You?
I'm in Philadelphia. Yeah, WRTI in Philadelphia. I interviewed Hillary Hahn and Joshua Bell several times. So I know you've done work, of course, for them. She did your wonderful violin concerto and Bella Fleck.
Did a great job of it.
Oh, wonderful. And you, of course, are an outstanding bassist, but this is really a departure for you in this new album.
Oh, I think everything else is a departure, and this is the real thing.
Oh, you really think so? Well, I want to tell you that I always thought of you as a classical musician. I'm sure a lot of people have. How do you categorize yourself?
I'm a musician.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
Oh, okay. Well, it's, you know, it is fair to say that my favorite musician is Bach, and Beethoven's not far behind.
Mm.
It's also true that I probably know the most and I'm the most expert generally in classical music, but I don't regard myself as a classical musician for whatever complicated set of reasons. I like music.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, the albums that I've heard you on are really, they have a folk bent. And, of course, you as a classical bassist, I'm sure, are used to having a rather limited repertoire in the sense of...
Very limited.
Limited in the sense of really saying something as a bass, if you know what I mean. I mean, you're always there.
In terms of solo or even chamber music repertoire, top drawer of compositions is not there.
No.
There's not one.
Just so Bottesini, maybe, right?
The Bottesini is the best of the solo music for the double bass. Mm. And so you have to make peace of that at some point. Transcriptions is not really... you learn a lot from it. It's useful, but it's not the same.
No, of course not. Were you always interested in expanding the repertoire, expanding your whole concept of the bass and its possibilities?
I think the correct answer is yes. I just was always interested in a wide range of music and always wanted to... And both in terms of involving my voice in it or, speaking of my voice in a broader sense is very much including the writing, that a lot of these things would be a part of it.
But you also are quite a pianist. I mean, that was also another instrument that you were quite capable of playing.
I love the piano. I probably play a couple hours a day when I can, and... It's probably my number one hobby. In addition to the fact that I've always just been kind of obsessed or fascinated by the piano, it's also for me a window into the repertoire because, having mentioned that the double bass doesn't have classical repertoire to speak of, the, all the top rate composers were pianists.
Well, of course, you also have a bass and treble clef. I mean, you don't have that with a single line instrument as well.
Oh yeah, no, the ability to play simultaneous melodies and chords and things, but also overviewing the repertoire. Since I mean, you've actually got to get down all the way down to tier two with Berlioz and Paganini before you have the non-pianist composers.
Mm-hmm.
And all these great composers wrote fairly simple pieces so that actually anybody who wants to can have exposure to some of the best stuff there is without a tremendous amount of effort. And the more effort you put in, the more you get back.
Well, were you always interested in composition? Because you certainly have been relatively prolific.
I was always interested in it. I always, you know, from the time that there was a piano around, I always wrote things. But I'd say a lot of the first 15 years were not as ambitious in that a lot of time it would, you know, it was always writing for friends and might might write something for my sister, a little violin and piano piece or something, you know, with my friends, a vehicle to improvise on. But it tended to be shorter and a lot of them were kind of sketchy. And then I guess at age 25, there was I had always envisioned that I'd be writing music, you know, more when I was 50 or 60 or whatever.
But you always thought that you would be composing, right?
Yes, I did. But I, when I hit age 25, I wrote, you know, the first piece that was a lot more ambitious. And it opened my eyes in a gigantic way. I just immediately saw that composition actually is the most interesting part of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from that point on, composition actually was the area in which I experienced the most consistent growth. But, and not to mention, you know, the pragmatic aspect of once I actually started a career, I needed something to play.
Right. But your career really was initially as a classical bass player, wasn't that it?
I would say that was the first public exposure. That's correct. I mean, I don't think that that was. I think that my basically hybrid content was probably there from, you know, age 8 or 9, but professional or public exposure, you know, it was definitely some of the first really nice things that happened were as a classical bassist.
Now, this album, you said something I loved in the liner notes. It was really quite interesting. You said something about the old-time and traditional music arises from the perception that the music is being played outside. And when you add a piano, then you're inside. I thought that was a kind of an interesting thing. In other words, folk music and traditional music is really a kind of improvisational.
It's evocative of outdoors.
Yeah.
You
like that?
Well, I do. It certainly is evocative of that for me. It's tricky. I mean, you do have some major kind of folk styles that do involve a piano. You know, most notably something like what Natalie McMaster does with the Kate Breton fiddling, also Scottish. They really do use a piano, but it's a funky sounding piano usually, and they play it kind of funky. So, and you still imagine just a very warm gathering of a lot of people indoors, not something you'd put up on a pedestal, but something a lot earthier.
I was just going to say, it's like Tom Hampson was saying that American song was being sung in the parlor or outside on the porch. I mean, it's again, you know, not a serious classical concert type of thing or recital. It's very much very personal and intimate in a way.
I think so. But, yeah, I just always, you know, but I'm also struck by just, you know, campfire imagery or just playing out by the creek or a lot of different things like that.
So that is what permeates your style, is that right?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily, I would say it permeates parts of it, not all of it. Like that song, Woody Creek, that I was referring to in liner notes, was very, even deliberately evocative in that way. I also, you know, like the highly processed stuff, too.
I was going to ask you, did you play around with the recording techniques?
Well, in terms of, in certain ways, yes, and in certain ways, no. I mean, by highly processed, I meant more like I was just making a reference to very refined music.
I see.
In terms of the recording techniques, it varied. In terms of the actual sounds of the instruments, tried to make them as natural as possible. For example, the bass and the piano have no reverb added, and they're it's not quite a classical style recording in that there's some mixing. I mean, I will, you know, bring some instruments up or down in volume sometimes, and they try not to do that in classical recording. Sometimes I think they should, but I guess in most cases, actually, the recording and the techniques were simple. It's just a matter of just using a lot of tracks.
I think I get the feeling that this was kind of the whole thing was a kind of a personal challenge to play all these instruments and then to put them together and to kind of compose extemporaneously. I mean, what motivated you to do this?
You know, it's something I have wanted to do all my life. It's always been in the back of my mind. Exactly why, I'm not sure, but it has been with me from day one. And I just haven't had the means to do it before. To have a room at home and a beautiful piano are really prerequisites. And just a very hard thing to do if you had to spend 3 or 4 months outside the house working on something like this. So,
right, of course, if you're out there playing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, normally a recording done in a more conventional way, if you took a long time, you'd take a week. A week or two. I know that some groups get in the studio and live there for 2 months, but it's a little indulgent, frankly.
Well, I would think, yeah. But this is a one-time shot. I mean, have you written down this music, or is this just improvisation like the jazz guys do?
Parts of it are written down. Most of it's not. Occasionally, like the couple of the real big piano parts that were real tricky, I actually wrote down. And practiced them for a couple weeks each, referring specifically to Roundabout and In Hindsight. Both of those required a lot of effort, and it was just easier to learn them, you know, writing them down. But most of the time, if I could think of something, like I don't think I wrote down any bass parts. For
I was
instance.
Just going to say on your feed, don't please don't feed the bear. I mean, you have some rather virtuosic playing. Was that improvised or?
No, it's figured out, but, you know, in a project like this, for me, improvising, the main reason to improvise, and this is different with different people, but my main motivation is dialogue with other people, and in this setting, it doesn't matter to me how I got the part, whether it was whether I thought about it for a while and wrote it down, or whether I just kind of played it on. And there's plenty of all of that. And sometimes I would have a good improvisation, but it had some technical flaws. And if I liked it enough, I might go learn it and then play it better.
Well, so you were the other person in many cases. I mean, you were playing these other instruments, and then you would of course improvise with yourself, but you were in a different role, obviously. I mean, that must have been rather interesting.
There were some things that were nice about it because I could essentially read my own mind, you know, the way that you try to when you work with other people. You try to really understand, you know, how they're thinking musically. And I got to say, I could understand how I was thinking musically.
Well, did you find that you always responded the same, no matter what you were playing?
There were aspects of the process that were always the same. Like, for instance, each instrument was equally difficult to play for me in that, although I'm a much better bass player than the other instruments, I would also often be trying something very ambitious. And not just technically, but just in terms of the bass maybe carrying the weight of the music sometimes. And so, whereas I can barely play the mandolin, but the parts were easy, and so it took about the same amount of effort on each instrument because I would come up with something that challenged me about the same amount on each one.
So in other words, you had a level of performance really that you had to be able to reach, and then that was it.
Well, yeah, and if a part was too hard, I had to scrap the part. You know, I mean, I couldn't.
Right.
I just had to find another part.
So that should have been a whole journey of self-discovery, in a way.
In a way, it was. I mean, it's an embarrassing indulgence, but what an indulgence! What a wonderful time.
Yes, and so now this was really an experimental album. Is that right?
Well, you know, I like music to be experimental. I mean, I guess I probably, recording Bach suites, I probably didn't feel like I wanted to be experimental at that point. That was not experimental. But, you know, when I'm writing music, I guess I kind of like it experimental.
Well, you're put on a whole different hat when you're composing. I mean, one does, I think, when you're playing somebody else's music. There's one whole aspect of it that is already there for you. As far as interpretation is concerned, that's yours. But in the sense of not having to think about the music creatively, you know, from scratch, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
It's a different...
Yeah. It is different. But it's... I guess there are not that many situations that are that rigid for me. You know, I've actually gravitated toward a lot of situations where... I feel like I've got the freedom to be myself and explore. The one thing I can say, though, that is fundamentally different in a project like this, although this can also be part of composing in general, but it's not part of working in a, you know, in a traditional recording situation with other players, is you feel free to take a lot of the side roads and try stuff. And if you've got other people around, you don't want to take those because it can be very irritating.
Yes.
Somebody just decides they want to go off and, oh, I just want this to be perfect. I got to work on, you know, and you're just going, oh, please. And so,
yeah, it's as you say, I mean, you're a lot freer in the sense that you can, you're governing what's going on.
I mean, yeah. And of course, the irony is that actually a lot of those side roads, maybe most of them are quite productive. You don't know where they're going, but it's both the process is, you know, is really fun, kind of going down somewhere you don't know, and I'm surprised that the destination or the result is often very interesting.
And you've had a good time doing it. What is this then going to produce, a whole other Edgar Meyer? Or
well, I it's the kind of thing that I will certainly come back to repeatedly, mainly because I enjoy it so much.
What's in the offing for you now? This, of course, is your newest album. I'm sure it's been a source of inspiration for other things for you.
Well, I'm a little covered up with projects. I just finished writing Joshua Bell a violin and piano piece that he'll tour next year. Mm-hmm. I've got Bela Fleck and Zakir Hussain and myself are writing a piece together that we will premiere in September with the Nashville Symphony and Leonard Slatkin for the opening of the new hall in Nashville, which is called Skermerhorn Symphony Center. And let's see, my friend Chris Thiele and I are trying to get a recording together. There's a lot of different projects going on.
But do you operate on a different level with each one? I mean, composition is one, performance is another, or is it all together?
You know, the vast majority of the projects I do combine writing and playing. There's an occasional project that's only writing and an occasional one that's only playing. But certainly the mainstream of my activity, on these big projects, it's very clear that about two-thirds to four-fifths of them involve writing and playing together.
Well, your plate is very full, and aren't we lucky to be the recipient of your wonderful art?
And I am lucky to get to do it.
And you bet you are, and just keep doing it. Thank you so much. I know your time is precious, and it was a delight speaking with you.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for doing this.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.